Harper Audio presents Lord Edgware Dies by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser.
Chapter 1. A Theatrical Party. The memory of the public is short. Already the intense interest and excitement aroused by the murder of George Alfred St. Vincent Marsh, 4th Baron Edgware, is a thing past and forgotten. Newer sensations have taken its place. My friend Hercule Poirot was never openly mentioned in connection with the case. This, I may say, was entirely in accordance with his own wishes. He did not choose to appear in it. The credit went elsewhere, and that is how he wished it to be. Moreover, from Poirot's own peculiar private point of view, the case was one of his failures. He always swears that it was the chance remark of a stranger in the street that put him on the right track. However that may be, it was his genius that discovered the truth of the affair. But for Hercule Poirot, I doubt if the crime would have been brought home to its perpetrator. I feel, therefore, that the time has come for me to set down all I know of the affair in black and white. I know the ins and outs of the case thoroughly, and I may also mention that I shall be fulfilling the wishes of a very fascinating lady in so doing. I have often recalled that day in Poirot's prim, neat little sitting-room when, striding up and down a particular strip of carpet, my little friend gave us his masterly and astounding résumé of the case. I am going to begin my narrative where he did on that occasion, at a London theatre, in June of last year. Carlotta Adams was quite the rage in London at that moment. The year before, she had given a couple of matinées which had been a wild success. This year she had had a 3-week season, of which this was the last night but one. Carlotta Adams was an American girl with the most amazing talent for single-handed sketches, unhampered by make-up or scenery. She seemed to speak every language with ease. Her sketch of an evening in a foreign hotel was really wonderful. In turn, American tourists, German tourists, middle-class English families, questionable ladies, impoverished Russian aristocrats, and weary, discreet waiters all flitted across the scene. Her sketches went from grave to gay and back again. Her dying Czechoslovakian woman in hospital brought a lump to the throat. A minute later we were rocking with laughter as a dentist plied his trade and chatted amiably with his victims. Her program closed with what she announced as some imitations. Here again she was amazingly clever. Without make-up of any kind, her features seemed to dissolve suddenly and reform themselves into those of a famous politician or a well-known actress or a society beauty. In each character she gave a short, typical speech. These speeches, by the way, were remarkably clever. They seemed to hit off every weakness of the subject selected. One of her last impersonations was Jane Wilkinson, a talented young American actress well-known in London. It was really very clever. Inanities slipped off her tongue, charged with some powerful emotional appeal, so that in spite of yourself you felt that each word was uttered with some potent and fundamental meaning. Her voice, exquisitely toned with a deep husky note in it, was intoxicating. The restrained gestures, each strangely significant, the slightly swaying body, the impression even of strong physical beauty, how she did it I cannot think. I had always been an admirer of the beautiful Jane Wilkinson. She had thrilled me in her emotional parts, and I had always maintained, in face of those who admitted her beauty but declared she was no actress, that she had considerable histrionic powers. It was a little uncanny to hear that well-known, slightly husky voice with the fatalistic drop in it that had stirred me so often, and to watch that seemingly poignant gesture of the slowly closing and unclosing hand, and the sudden throwback of the head with the hair shaken back from the face that I realized she always gave at the close of a dramatic scene. Jane Wilkinson was one of those actresses who had left the stage on her marriage only to return to it a couple of years later. 3 years ago she had married the wealthy but slightly eccentric Lord Edgware. Rumour went that she had left him shortly afterwards. At any rate, 18 months after the marriage, she was acting for the films in America, and had this season appeared in a successful play in London. Watching Carlotta Adams' clever but perhaps slightly malicious imitation, it occurred to me to wonder how such imitations were regarded by the subjects elected. Were they pleased at the notoriety, at the advertisement it afforded, or were they annoyed at what was, after all, a deliberate exposing of the tricks of their trade?